Our guest this week on the Arizona Media Podcast is Dave Pasch, ESPN NBA college basketball, football, Cardinal announcer, a Valley resident, a man of faith that I admire greatly, and also a man that is on the road quite a bit. I'm not sure where we're catching him today because we're taping this in the end part of February. Where are you today?
Hey, Brett. I am in Berkeley, starting a four-game and four-day stretch, which is common for this time of year. So I'm in Berkeley, and then we're actually back in Phoenix tomorrow. I'll sleep in my own bed tomorrow. We got UCLA, Arizona State tomorrow night. So,
lay your schedule out for the next 10 days.
So Oregon, Cal tonight, UCLA, ASU tomorrow. I will fly then Friday morning to LA for Spurs, Clippers. And then originally our crew was scheduled for the Arizona-UCLA game, but with it going to primetime, we flip-flop. So we're actually going to Texas. We got Kansas at Texas and Austin on Saturday night. So it'll be interesting. Bill Walton, who I obviously did the college games with, we just did an NBA game in Cleveland. But I don't know the last time, if he's ever done a college game outside the Pac-12 in conference play. I know he's done Maui and he's been to China for games. But Bill in Texas will be interesting. And then kind of do it all over again next week. I don't think it's 4 and 4 days. It might be 3 and 4 days next week with a mix of college and pro.
Who coordinates all this for you, Dave?
Well, you know, ESPN obviously has different departments. They work together to make sure that, you know, there's no overlap of schedules. But, you know, when you have a certain number of events that you're contracted for, you got to get them in. And so that's why there's the number of, you know, games that I have consecutively. And then, you know, they have a travel department that you work with to make sure that, you know, everything's all set in terms of flights and hotels and all that.
Yeah, fans see you show up on TV, but I'm curious on the process. Have you ever gotten stuck and come close to not making it to the next assignment with travel?
No. In fact, you know, I'd made it just about, you know, I just finished my 15th year doing the Cardinals, and I think it was the 13th year of the ESPN Cardinals double. Now, the first 3 years I did the Friday night college football, so it wasn't a problem getting to Cardinal games. But I had no issues until this year. There was a flight cancellation. There was another flight delay. I had, like, no other options and ended up making it to the Cardinals-Panther game, you know, with plenty of time to spare, a couple hours before kick or an hour and a half before kick. But it was hairy getting there. That's probably the closest I've come. I think there was one a few years ago going from college basketball to NBA where the flight was delayed and then they diverted the flight, still made it, you know, in time for the game. But it's stressful. The travel Sure. part of it is the worst part of it. The games are easy.
It's interesting because when I talk to people or I've taught over at Arizona State, they think that you fly private and that you have everybody there. That's not the case, right? I mean, you're just there at the mercy of said airline.
Yeah, I mean, yes, pretty much. I mean, you're, you know, I think there are a few people that do fly private, but not many. Mm-hmm. You know, and the ones that do, you know, I think, you know, obviously you watch College Game Day, you see Kirk Herbstreit at game day, and then you see him later that night.
Right.
You know, sometimes across the country, obviously he's not getting on a commercial flight to try to make that. You know, that's a different situation. But when you're going from game to game, I'd say 99% of people that work at ESPN are just like everybody else. I mean, you're going to the airport and you're checking in, you're going through security, get on the plane, get off the plane, rental car, taxi, whatever, and get to the hotel. I mean, yeah, it's pretty much what we do.
And if you don't have Wi-Fi on the plane, you've got to just be livid. If Wi-Fi goes, I would imagine for you in preparation, and we'll get in the process, but if you don't have Wi-Fi, you're just not happy.
Yeah, I mean, prep is, you know, sometimes on the plane, though, it's you're just trying to relax or whatever. But, when you don't have Wi-Fi, it's getting to the point now where if there isn't TVs on there, you get disappointed because so many of the airlines have the TVs. But Wi-Fi is a must.
The process of preparation. So you have Arizona State and UCLA tomorrow night in Tempe as we're taping this, and you're tonight doing another game. Take me through the process of the game ahead, or is your day the process of game ahead, game ahead, game ahead? Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah, it's a little. I mean, you're doing a little of it all the time. For example, so I had some time when I was home a couple days ago to, you know, the Spurs don't play till Friday, so their stats, their numbers are still good from the All-Star break. So, and I have not had the Spurs yet this year, so it gave me some time to kind of dive in there. So, you know, when I get closer to the game, I've already got a lot of the basics down. All the stats are down. Player information, all that. You know, for Oregon and Cal tonight, I just had Oregon last week. I just had Cal a week and a half ago. So, and I've had each team several times. So it's much easier when you've had a team already. A lot of it is, okay, just get the stats on your board, copy the stats, shooting percentages, all that, so that you have it. And then it's, you know, a lot of what you get, I'll go over to shoot around the day for both teams, and, you know, you get a chance to talk to the coaches. Sometimes, you know, you don't go to the shoot around, or a team doesn't have one. You get the coach at the arena before the game, just a few minutes, or even the SID, like Doug Tamro from ASU, is very good about giving you info. And that helps your prep, especially when you've had teams. Again, I've had UCLA, had Arizona State. It's much easier when you've had teams already.
How do you and Bill prep for something like that? Now, and I know that there's the humorous side, but there is the behind-the-scenes side. I saw the both of you down at U of A ASU. I see Bill up at the Pac-12 tournament in Vegas, and he's the last one sitting there courtside working on notes for the next day. The thought that Bill doesn't do any prep at all, I think, is ridiculous. You may correct me on that. But
no, he does a ton of prep. He probably does more prep than anybody I've ever seen. It's just different kinds of prep. I mean, he's getting, you know, he'll talk to players and coaches. A lot of it's personal information that he's trying to get so he can tell stories, or he's got notes. You know, he does his Walton's World deal, and so I think this morning he's gone around campus here, and they're doing something, and, you know, he's got information from that. And when he was at Arizona, he did something with the interim athletic director, so right. He had, you know, her background. I mean, he's constantly doing prep work stuff. He just, number one, he doesn't share with me. It's all he likes it to be totally spontaneous, so there's no discussion or anything really till you get on the air. And then it's just different kinds of prep. He's not, you know, grinding the tape to try to figure out why a team is struggling defending the pick and roll. I mean, he's just, that's just not him. You know, it's more about the personal stories and the human interest stuff.
When it's interesting. So you'll have Bill tomorrow night. When you sit down, let's say next to Doris Burke or Hubie Brown or Bill Walton, or last week you had Dick Vitale and Bill Walton together, which is a challenge in itself, I'm sure, for you. But how do you go through the process of preparation with each one of the analysts? Do they come to you? Do you go to them? How does that work?
Well, it just depends. I mean, a lot of times, you know, I guess it depends, you know, on how long you've been in that city. I mean, the back-to-backs, it's hard to get time with the analysts, but, you know, sometimes you're grabbing lunch together. You know, with Bill, it's a little bit different. Those are rare. We have a lot of the back-to-backs. And again, you know, until the game's over, he doesn't really want to talk. It's not personal. It's just he'd rather not share what's on his mind. He'd rather just save everything for on the air. So there's not a whole lot of discussion. He'll say hello and, you know, we'll talk about a couple things, but usually it's not game related. It's not related to the broadcast that night. He likes it that way. It's fun for him. You know, it's, I mean, if you have kids and, you know, when you have younger kids and you call up the parents and then you set up a play date and you tell your son or your daughter, hey, guess you're having a play date tonight with so-and-so, and they get really excited. And as soon as you get the play date, everything picks up from the last time you had the play date. It's like there wasn't this time that elapsed in between. And I kind of just think that's what it's like working with Bill. I may not see him for a while, but the play date starts when the game starts. And like for him, it's like nothing, you know, it's just like one continuous conversation from the previous week. It's just back into, you know, you just kind of, you have this mold of how it's supposed to go. And that's just kind of how it happens. It just kind of plays out that way. So with him, it's different, no doubt, than other analysts.
Dave Pasch, Arizona Media Podcast with Brad Susmat. So when you have a player like Lonzo Ball tomorrow night, do you try to find time to visit with Lonzo Ball? Is that just while they're going through shoot around an hour and a half before? When you have a player of that caliber, do you want some access as a play-by-play guy to know what makes him tick, or do you leave that to Bill?
You know, it depends. I mean, Bill usually is the one who's talking to the players that shoot around him, and occasionally they'll come over occasionally you'll work out time to have a conversation with them. You know, Lonzo, I think, is a little bit different because, you know, there's not a lot of stars in college basketball that people are familiar with. Obviously, he is a name that people are familiar with. So if you get a chance, yeah, you'd love to have time. But I think, you know, you have a shorter broadcast than you do for NBA. It's, right. You know, a two-hour broadcast window pretty much. You don't have a lot of time to get some of the personal stories in. So you spend more time, I do anyway, with coaches and just making sure you're ready for Bill and whatever he might throw at you.
Okay, so and let's get into the coach part. You have Steve Alford, you have Bobby Hurley. Do you go to them for 10 minutes? Do you get them by phone? How do you go through tomorrow?
Yeah, so it's two different ways. If you're at a shoot around, so, you know, team practices the day before a game, and a lot of them, most of them have shoot arounds for about an hour, you know, 6 to 7 hours before tip off. So, you know, you're over there watching, and the coach will come over at some point, or the sports information director will go get the coach to come over, and, you know, you just have a conversation. Saturday, Arizona, this past Saturday at Washington, they did not shoot around, so the sports information director made Sean available to us about an hour and a half before tip-off when they arrived at the arena. So that's really how it works. You know, you get 5 to 10 minutes, depending on who the coach is, you know, depending on the relationship you have with the coach.
Right.
You know, some coaches will tell you everything without even asking. Some coaches, you know, it's hard to get information. But, you know, working in the Pac-12 now for the last 5 years, it's been, you know, great. All the coaches are great to work with. They're great in terms of information. There's a lot of trust built up where, you know, if they tell you something that's off the record, you know, they don't even have to tell you it's off the record anymore. You just know
right.
What is, you know, for discussion and what's not. But that takes time to build that up. And, you know, they know, too, that, you know, we're, you know, usually doing the biggest Pac-12 games that are on ESPN, and we're doing the Pac-12 championships. So, you know, there's, you know, it helps them. You're promoting their program and but, you know, obviously it's helping you at the same time because they're giving you information you can use.
This isn't meant as a disrespect towards Arizona State. This isn't even a disrespect towards – you had U of A Washington, correct, last week? You had
yes.
The Fultz game. So you could go into those games knowing the records, knowing this may not be a competitive game. If you could give the listener an idea of your preparation, does it change when you look at something like that versus a U of A UCLA game where you're anticipating it coming down to the end?
A little bit. I mean, you're probably, for a game like Arizona-Washington, I probably did a little bit more big picture preparation.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to do that in a game, you know, where it's two top five teams as well. I mean, you want to make sure that you're, you know, we had the Oregon-UCLA game, which, you know, we had a feeling would be a good game, but
great game.
You don't know for sure.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're doing your normal prep. You want to make sure that you don't just dismiss the big picture topics in a close game, because it's still good discussion. So I would say the prep is pretty similar. You know, again, when you've had a team several times, it's much easier because you know that team more. You don't take as many notes or write as much down because you've had more experience with them. Then, you know, the Kansas-Texas game that we have on Saturday, you know, we'll take more prep because there's a lot of discovery you're doing as you're researching because you just haven't had these teams before.
Back on Coach Access, you mentioned you have San Antonio later this week, and there's always a lot said about Greg Popovich. Can you give the fans an idea behind the scenes of dealing with him in terms of preparation and before a broadcast? Because you don't have to do the in-game interview, I don't believe. I know sometimes the play-by-play guy
sometimes
does.
Sometimes I have.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it depends. I've got them. I think I have them 4 times coming up, and I think I have twice. I think I have to do it. Twice I don't, if I recall. But, you know, before the game, he's great. I mean, he's very open, and, you know, you need to still be prepared. You can't ask a dumb question in the
sure.
Even in that setting where it's you're just sitting around talking. But he's great in terms of telling you what's going on with the team. You know, again, I don't think he cares. You know, he's not saying off the record or anything. I don't think he cares.
Hmm.
You know, even if you were to to say it, but I think there's just, again, kind of an unwritten thing there where you just know what you can say and what you can't. I understand with the in-game interviews that, you know, he wants to coach his team. He doesn't want to be bothered by something in the middle of the game. I get it. But, you know, the other coaches are doing it. The other coaches, you know, are doing it, and they're doing it respectfully. And, you know, I know he's heard from a lot of people that tell him, hey, just do it and be done with it. But I get it. You know, he's used to one way. I mean, it's hard when for, you know, 65 to 70 of the 82 games, you're coaching one way, and then all of a sudden you're told, okay, this night's different. Well, to him, it's not. It's not different. Coaching in the NBA Finals is not different for him than coaching on a Tuesday night in Milwaukee. It's the same. It's the same every game for him. I think that's probably why he doesn't like it, because he has a routine like a lot of coaches do.
Sure. I want to go back for a minute on a few things with you in terms of your process to become where you are today. Who pushed the button inside of you to get you? You graduated from Syracuse. You had some very interesting jobs early on in your career and reading up. The Detroit Vipers, I'm curious about that. That sounds like fun. Who pushed the button to get you to be a broadcaster?
Well, I think what I realized in high school, when I, you know, was short, not, you know, and not good enough at football and basketball. You know, I played golf in high school. That was the one sport that I was better at than the other sports. But I realized that I wasn't good enough to play. I wanted to be involved in sports. And, you know, it was really, you know, ESPN. I graduated from high school in 1990. So, I mean, ESPN at that time was just getting big.
Right.
And Dick Vitale was always talking about all these broadcasters that went to Syracuse. And I became a Syracuse fan watching growing up in Madison, Wisconsin, because they were on all the time. And Dick Vitale was always talking about them, and they were good, and they had all these star players, and they were fun to watch. Sherman Douglas throwing alley-oops. And so I wanted to go to Syracuse. I wanted to get into broadcasting, and did that. And, you know, it's very competitive there, to work at the radio station that, you know, all the guys going back to Marty Glickman, then to Marv Albert, to Bob Costas, to Dick Stockton, and then some of the current, you know, Sean McDonough, Mike Tirico. I mean, it's hard to get on the air there, and there's so many people that want to do it. But I knew that's what I wanted to do, so I just kind of kept pushing. And, you know, when I graduated from college, I think most of us that get out of Syracuse think that, okay, here we go, CBS, ESPN. But it obviously didn't work that way. At least it didn't 20 years ago. You know, today there's more jobs and more opportunities to get into, you know, some of these networks at an ESPNU or an ESPN3 or CBS Sports Network. There's other opportunities to get games, you know, on a smaller scale. But there wasn't 20 years ago. I mean, sports talk radio was just kind of beginning.
Yep.
And so, you know, I worked in a small market in Morgantown, West Virginia, and I worked for a guy there by the name of Tony Caridi, who still is doing the Mountaineers football and basketball. He's got a production company there as well, and he's a Syracuse grad. And he really was the one that really pushed me to get better. He challenged me to, you know, kind of check the ego and work on the craft. And I that's why when people ask me, okay, you know, I'm trying to get a job, I'm trying to get started, I always tell them, take any job you can get, whether it's a small market or whatever, even if it's not doing sports, and try to find somebody that can mentor you. Mm-hmm. Because it was really important for me to have somebody that would challenge me. Cause I look back now and think, boy, if I would, and I was only there for 10 months, had I not had that experience, would I have been ready for, you know, some of the stuff that I'm doing now? So that's for me kind of where it all, started.
Detroit Vipers. Tell me about that experience.
So after 10 months in Morgantown, I got a job in Detroit. The all-sports station there had been on the air for a year, WDFN.
Yep.
They had only been on the air for 12 months. And I got hired as like an anchor. I was doing the nighttime anchoring, you know, the sports updates. And I had done, obviously, play-by-play previously and wanted to continue to do it. So I went to Tom Wilson. I was covering some of the Piston games for the radio station. Tom Wilson was the president of the team. And I said, you guys are simulcasting your hockey games. Why don't you pay me, since you're already paying an engineer to run the board for the radio, but why don't you just pay me to run the board? I know how to do it. And I'll broadcast the game. So I'll do the play-by-play and I'll run the board, and you don't have to pay me anymore. He was good with that, and that's kind of how I got started doing that. And I was terrible. I knew nothing about hockey. I mean, it was really bad.
Do you still have tapes? Still have the tapes?
I hope not.
Yeah.
I hope not.
That bad, huh?
Yeah, it was bad. But it did help me get a job in Chicago working for the Blackhawks. So, I started to learn about the sport and had a pretty good, knowledge of it. But it was never like a huge passion for me. For a while there, I thought, okay, this is the path I'm going down. I'm going to be an NHL announcer. But I just, didn't have the knowledge or the passion. When we went to Chicago, they were at the time, the local TV home games were not on. They would simulcast the road games. I mean, think about this, is Chicago. Right. They would simulcast the road games, and there would be radio only for the home games. I mean, this isn't that long ago. It's been 20 years, but think about that. And there was discussion that they would eventually split the broadcast, which they've done, and I think they did when the new ownership took over, 10 or 15 years ago. Now they're winning championships. When I was there, they were, they weren't very good, and they were just trying to figure out how to kind of get into the next century of doing business. And so when I realized that they weren't going to, make this change, and, I was going to be doing a lot of pre and post game and a talk show, I missed the play-by-play, and that's when I started to look for play-by-play jobs. Mm. But the hockey thing was fun. It was cool to be the guy that was my analyst on the Vipers was a guy by the name of Darren Elliott, and Darren's done really well. I think for a while he was on NBC. He might still be. I don't watch a lot of hockey, to be honest. But so that was fortunate, too, that I got to work with somebody who was really good.
Let me finish with a couple things here, and I'm not going to get into football because it's not football season, because that's a whole nother topic, and hopefully you want to do this again another time. But who's mentoring you now? So you talked about mentoring earlier, and somebody got to you. You're in your mid-40s. You're doing a lot of really cool things. You're also juggling a family life, and you're on the road a ton, which is not easy. So I'm wondering, who's mentoring you on a broadcast, and now do you guys, Syracuse alums, McDonough, Tirico, do they check in with Pash? I mean, how does this work? Who's mentoring you?
Well, I mean, no one's really mentoring you in terms of, listen, I mean, you'll get texts or, you'll have phone calls with, your friends or bosses occasionally, or I'll just check in a lot of times with, one of my, bosses, just send them a text. Hey, how am I doing? What do you think? What can I improve on? What do I need to do? And I think at this stage too, something I've learned, I've been at ESPN now for 13 years. So much of it, when you're there, I mean, remember when I got to ESPN, I was having lunch with Tirico, and he said, okay, so you've won the game. Now the question is, how far do you want to go within the game? In other words, you've got to ESPN.
Right.
And there's so many people once you're there. I mean, there's so much competition. There's so many talented people. A lot of it is right place, right time, who an opportunity that comes along at a certain time. Is it the right time for you? What's in your contract? What's in someone else's contract? I mean, there's just a lot of other variables once you're there, even before you're there, but once you're there, because, again, there's so much competition. As one analyst told me, it's like you're playing for the Yankees in the 20s. I mean, it's an incredible lineup. It's hard to crack. So being number 7 or number 8 in that lineup, as opposed to the cleanup guy, isn't a bad thing. I think because of the competition and because of where you're at, I mean, you're doing a lot of fine tuning. So there's really nobody that's, spending a lot of time like listening or watching, but
right.
You do keep in touch with your friends that are in the business.
And do you have an agent that does this too, Dave?
Yeah. I mean, your agent, I think the agent more, Sandy Montag, who I've been with now just for a little over a year, who obviously is very well known in the business.
Yep.
We're just kind of building that relationship, but he's somebody that, obviously knows the business well and has had a lot of great clients over the years, that someone that is going to tell it to you straight if there's something you need to work on or something that he likes.
When you get home, do you shut everything off? Do you find time? Because you've got family to juggle too. How do you do that?
Try to, yeah. It's hard in season. I mean, I, you know, I go pretty hard for about 8 months and then really have about 4 months, 2.5 months where you're really off, and then 4 months where it's limited travel. So, you know, it's almost like you get that teacher clock, you know, for 12 months where there's this downtime in the summer. But I, you know, it is hard. You try to shut it down when you're home, but you also, you know, if you're not paying attention to what's going on, you know, if you completely shut it down, then you miss stuff.
Right.
So you still have to, you know, stay engaged to the sports world, engaged to what games you have coming up.
Do the kids understand what you're doing?
They do. I mean, it's, you know, I think it's really all they've known. I mean, even our oldest, who is 18, you know, it's all she's known. It's all she can remember, really, was the travel. They get it. I'm sure they don't like it at times. I think they like part of it, but, you know, it's just really what they've known. You don't have – part of it is you try not to make it seem like it's a huge deal. And this is what my wife and I have talked about, because if you make it seem like it's a big deal every time you leave, then it's going to be, you know, it's going to be harder for them. But if you make it just, hey, this is part of what you do, is what dad does to provide, then,
right.
But it is hard walking out that door, knowing that you're not going to, you know, see him for, especially this time of year where, like, for the next 5 weeks, you're just going really hard.
Yeah. And you get the text message, what was Bill Walton saying? What happened there, Dad? I mean, who is this guy that is next to you?
Yeah.
What is this book, Shoe Dog? I mean, what is going on here? Why do I hear about this?
I do get a lot of texts, usually not from the – I don't think they're doing a whole lot of watching. They got enough stuff going on in their life to be watching me. But, yeah, I get plenty of text messages during games.
I'll let you go off that. I appreciate your time and insight. Thanks for joining
us. Sure. You got it.
It's Dave Pasch, and that is this week's Arizona Media Podcast.